Hello, everyone. I'm John Melke, and this is Parkside Today. Today, we welcome back Associate Professor of Philosophy, Dr. Christopher Hudspeth. A couple of months ago, Christopher was a guest on the show, and we had the chance to continue today the conversation around smart cities, and kind of specifically the Smart Cities Brown Bag series here at UW Parkside. We'll also touch upon some of the things that had the chance, myself and Dr. Hudspeth and others here at Parkside had the chance to get from the Racine Smart Cities conferences that have been going on. So, Christopher, welcome back to Parkside Today.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with the Parkside Smart Cities Brown Bag series. Okay. This is the second semester that you have done this. You did it in the fall of 18.
Yep.
And now redoing for the fall of 19. Yep. Tell us about some of the things lined up for people. And this is open to the public.
It is open to the
public. So anyone can attend from noon until 1 on Wednesdays.
Yep.
And tell us about what's lined up for this semester.
Well, so one of the first things I want to point out this semester, which we're excited about, is this year, unlike last year, we're actually videotaping the presentations, and then we'll be putting them on the web later. So sadly, we're working at the kinks of being able to live stream and video at the same time. But at the moment, we're videoing, and they'll be online later. So as of right now, you can actually, if you missed last week's presentation, you can come see that. I'm not trying to plug that you should go watch mine, but it just so happens that last week's presentation was mine.
Was yours.
Yeah, so if you're interested in seeing what a philosopher might have to say about what is a smart city, you are welcome to check out the webpage on that. Mm-hmm. But upcoming talks I'm pretty excited about. We've got some new and interesting people this year who are participating that we didn't have participate last year. We actually have a new member of the faculty coming up this week, being September 18th. I don't know when this is going to air. Versus when we're recording, but so
I think we're on the week of September 23rd.
Okay, so
around next week.
In the past, you would have had the opportunity to see Dr. Rivero Cavello. He's actually a new member of the faculty here at Parkside. He's doing one which has the fun title of "Sex, Drugs, and Candy Crush."
Wow!
He's going to talk about sort of the effect that those kind of games have on our brain states because he's a psychologist.
Hmm.
And the week of September 25th, Professor Astoria is going to be presenting one called the Emerald City, Capital, Climate, and the Smart City. He works on energy policy stuff in his own research, and so he's got a nice overlap here. Another new speaker this year I'm actually quite excited about is Major Bartlett from the Army ROTC is going to be presenting for us. His topic is Smart Armies, Technology's Impact on Forward-Based Design.
Wow.
And that one, he's going to basically talk about how when they deploy and all of the components that you need in a city, they've got to have in a base, except they've got to be mobile with it. And so he's going to talk about how that those technologies kind of interrelate and how some might even filter down. And so that one's going to be pretty neat.
Mm-hmm.
Teresa Castor will be speaking on October 9th. Professor Castor will be... Her title is Interacting with Humans and Non-Humans in a Smart City. And so I take it that doesn't mean pets. I take it that means perhaps robots and whatnot. So, so hers will be quite a bit of fun. October 16th, we have another new faculty member to the university, Aubrey McDonald. Professor McDonald will be speaking on the role of social media in shaping our perceptions of safety. She's sort of focusing on how things like the warnings that we get, you know, not necessarily thunderstorm warnings, but you get updates from the university about things that are happening in your community, how that changes the way we think about how safe we really are. That is basically that they probably make us feel less safe when we're actually much safer than we used to be. Melissa Gregg has come back this year. She'll be doing on October 23rd, Brain-Computer Interfaces, Taking Thoughts Out of the Human Body to Interface Within Smart Cities. So she's going to be sort of how we actually do that transition. That'll be fun. A new speaker, but not a new professor to the school, Zaid Altahat. He actually runs
App Factory.
The App Factory, He's actually going to be doing a presentation on blockchain. Blockchain is at the Downtown of Smart Cities is the name of his. That'll be on October 30th. Okay. This one's exciting. I talked to Dean and a dean into actually giving a presentation on November 6th. Dean Baldwin, Dirk Baldwin of the College of Business.
Economics and Computing.
Thank you for finishing that for me because I forgot what the rest of it CBEC. Was. CBEC.
The acronym here at UW Parkside, CBEC, College of Business Economics and Computing.
Yeah, so Dirk Baldwin's going to be doing one on esports. And is it the world's new favorite pastime? There's millions and millions of dollars in esports. And a lot of people have probably heard about the 16-year-old kid who won $3 million playing Fortnite about a month ago. And so he's going to be talking about that. John Ward is going to be doing an interesting one on big data on November 13th. And then Dean James of the College of Social Science and Professional Studies, she'll be closing us out on November 20th with Smart Cities as Platforms for Cooperation.
That's a very extensive lineup you have for this semester.
Thank you. I work pretty hard trying to make sure that I get a good breadth of folks participating.
It is. And how, I mean, when you're thinking about setting up the semester, do you have an idea of topics you'd want to cover, or is it more getting in touch with the people and saying, what might you like to present?
It's more the latter than the former. I would love to be able to be like, our theme this year for Smart Cities is going to be, but our depth is not quite where I can play that game. We just don't have enough faculty to do that. And so mostly it's to try to come to the faculty and try to say, how would you like to participate? And a big chunk of what I end up having to do with them is sort of explain Smart Cities to them and help them see how their research relates. Very few of us on campus specifically work in the area of Smart Cities. And so it's really more about like taking the opportunity to see how these technological advances are changing our fields.
Right.
And how that is going to impact the society in which we live. And so I spend a lot of time just trying to help them sort of see where we're going. And then I also, again, I try to have all of the colleges represented. I love the diversity because I do think smart cities interact with all aspects of our life.
Yeah.
And so I think it's good to see all the different ways it interacts. And so I go out of my way to try to make sure I get people from different places. And then I also like to get new voices. So some of these people are in here again because they're willing, because they say yes. But it is also the case that, for instance, myself, Professor Castor, Professor Historia, and Dean James, each of us actually teaches a course in the Smart City certificate that the graduate certificate that we're now offering. So those names made sense to bring back because they're people that are at least teaching classes directly in the field.
Sure.
And then after that, it was like, well, who can I get new or who's updated their research in the area? And that was the sort of starting point for where I started looking for people.
When you were on the show a couple of months ago, and we opened it with kind of the basic, what is a smart city? And it was interesting to hear Racine Mayor Corey Mason open the Racine Smart Cities Conference last week or now 2 weeks ago.
Let's see,
if we're airing on the September, whatever.
Whatever.
It was in the recent past.
September 4th or something.
September 4th. And he opened it with the people coming up to him and saying, oh, congratulations on Racine being named a smart city. And then following up with the question of, what exactly is a smart city? So it was one of the questions that we asked. We started the conversation with a couple months ago. And your reply to that was, maybe there's always been smart cities. It's just a little different in how the technology works. And when you talk to your colleagues about presentations for the brown bag, does it kind of go where you start thinking, oh, that does have smart city connections or implications?
A lot of it is that. I mean, I will admit, a lot of my time when trying to talk to them about it is to try to think, what do I know about what they study?
Oh, yeah.
Right. And then how do I think it connects to what we do?
Right.
Or what we do with smart cities. And so it's me trying to be like, well, what about this idea? What about this idea? What about this idea? Sometimes it's just like, oh, I do have a good idea. But yeah, it is a lot of just exactly what you say, which is smart cities are actually more expansive than we probably give them credit for. I do know my argument for why they've always been around, but I guess I recently gave the lecture on smart cities, and so even though I like to generally argue that they are more expansive, I did just give the lecture, and so I'm like, oh, that was probably a little too strong a claim. That I did literally this morning, the lecture I gave was that the Internet of Things was a necessary component of a smart city, that without it, you might have AI in a city, but until all the components start talking to each other, it's not really a smart city. It may be a very intelligent city or something, or it may be a very interactive city, but it's not going to be a smart city until you get all those components talking to each other. So I guess I want to revise my earlier definition.
Right. But that's an interesting, as you see those things being connected and people making the, or sort of, I know it's the cliche these days, you hear it a lot, but connecting the dots of what the different technology, what technologies are you being used in different agencies, whether it be we heard from Police Chief Art Howell, we heard from the Fire Chief, we heard from the Water Department, the Sewer Department, that here's all these places where technology in a city is being used, and as they start coming together, there's the foundation of your smart city.
Yeah, the Water Department one actually was really interesting to me, like finding out the technology they're using to predict when pumps and motors are going to fail.
Right.
I was just fascinated by that.
Right. Yeah, if you can go through and say, we're able to plan these versus, uh-oh, here comes the fire drill of this went down and we better take people off of this particular job to do that, that makes your experience as the city resident much more, you would think, more pleasant.
Well, yeah. I mean, I have to believe that. I mean, not only would it make city services more consistent, I imagine that it's also going to make it so that city services are less expensive, because if you don't have to do an emergency shutdown of a pump for the water station, if you can plan in advance for that, you're not going to have to pay all the crazy overtimes. You're not going to have all the damage and all the other stuff that comes with trying to fix things in the moment it breaks. If you can sort of set aside that time, it's going to be really, really useful.
Yeah. And to think about, you know, Bob Bennett, from a former chief innovation officer with Kansas City, Missouri, was part of the conference as well. And when he was talking about how you can take that knowledge or that planning of, okay, we're going to repair this particular pump, and now how does that work with maybe another department in the city that says, oh, if you're going to be tearing that up, maybe we'll do this while you're getting that done, rather than tearing the same thing up, you know, three times in 6 months. So
Right, exactly. Like, oh, the water department's going to be pulling up a section of the road. Great. Guess what? You know, guess what? The phone service is, you know, the wireless lines are not wireless lines, obviously, but like
the other lines that are
underground that might be in that same area that also might need to be repaired, rather than some poor neighborhood who like 1 week has it torn up for the water pipes, and then next week torn up for the sewer pipes, and then next week torn up for the fiber optic cable. They could just nail it all in one slope.
Right.
If they all knew that they were about to be working in the same area.
They're going to do the same. Right. So we're joined today by Associate Professor of Philosophy, Dr. Christopher Hudspeth, on the subject of smart cities. And Christopher, when you did the Brown Bag series last semester, were there things that you learned from that experience or that you've kind of woven into this semester's series?
Okay, so it was last year, so it's in the fall. So I'm gonna dredge into the memory banks to see how much I can remember there. I'm certain that there are definitely things. There are definitely a lot that I learned in last year's. Professor Kenny French did one on Masdar City. I knew almost nothing about Masdar City before that, and so I learned a lot. Professor Ward did an amazing one about tracking IP addresses and musical tastes. Those were fascinating about like where music is being downloaded in various parts of the world. It was really cool. Rachel Headley did one last year on whether or not the smart revolution is actually going to be environmentally green. Hers was interesting. Professor Linke did one on actual the security of our energy grid, which was disturbing to say the least about it. So did I learn stuff? Absolutely. I learned a ton. Did I incorporate it? I'm going to answer that yes, but if you were to like sort of pin me down and show me exactly where it is in any of my current conversations or discussions, I don't know that I can do a good job of saying, aha, I got this exact fact from so-and-so, but I know that they're actually in there. It also did sort of change a little bit the way I think about the series.
How so?
Well, there were so many more people from the community than I expected.
Oh.
And so I realized that we had to be, I guess I had focused it on the class and that there might then be people in the community, but it's really more that there's community and then there are going to be some people from the class. And so it made me think about the rooming more. The members of the community really wanted to have the videotaped version of it. And I had kind of been like, well, the students are going to be there anyway. Who kind of cares if it's videotaped? But now I'm like, okay, we really got to get on board and get that in place and up and running so people can have access to that later. So there are definitely aspects of the series that have been altered because of the experience of last year.
Mm-hmm. What about kind of going back to the ongoing conferences and work that the city of Racine is doing? How do you see what they're doing or their ability to kind of make people aware of what the city is trying to do? I don't know if that's a great question or not.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you could try asking me that differently.
What would be the difference? When you look at what Racine is doing or trying to accomplish with maybe even answering the question of what is a smart city so that its residents can and kind of get on board with that and say, oh, yeah, this is a good thing. I can see how this will be a good thing for my life, or it's a good thing that I'm a resident of Racine, and how they're going about it. Do you have a perspective on how they're getting some of that information out or creating that awareness?
Well, I guess my immediate one is I think they must be doing a decent job. They've been in the paper quite a lot recently. I think they're doing a pretty good job of rolling things out in staged fashion so that they're not just announcing everything they're doing all at once. So they're doing a good job of sort of keeping their name out there. I'm going to admit I don't have a good sense of how much everyday average people know about it. I'm often surprised when members of the community are aware about stuff. I mean, I have to admit, I guess I'm of a generation where I don't get a newspaper regularly. And so I'm always kind of impressed by people who know stuff from the newspaper. I'm like, how'd you learn that fact? And it was like, because I got a daily paper from the city. And I was like, what? so maybe that's my fault. But I think there are definitely certain groups within the city who are very aware of what the city are doing about it. I'm not saying this to be critical about the city, because I think they're doing a wonderful job in what it is they're attempting to do, and they are really attempting to pull Racine forward in leaps and bounds.
Right.
I mean, when you think about how 2 years ago you couldn't even pay your water bill online, you know, and they're trying to drag us into 5G in the next couple of years.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, they're doing quite a bit. But, you know, I still meet people occasionally who have no idea that any of that stuff's coming in the pike. And now, again, that they might be like me, they don't have a paper, you know. But I think they're doing a really interesting job, and they're bringing a lot of external groups in who look like they really want to be supportive and help. You know, I mean, being at that conference, what I want to say is last week, but when this airs, I guess will be 3 weeks ago.
Right. A little while ago.
Earlier in September.
Yeah.
Looking at that, there's some interesting groups that are you know, putting their hat in the ring to see what they can provide for the city of Racine. And I know that it's not just the city, but there's other groups that are also actively engaged in this kind of process. I mean, maybe a little less focused on the smart city part of it, but definitely interested in how they can leverage the smart city portion of it. So I think about Visioning Greater Racine or something like that, or the Downtown Racine Corporation, and how they're interested in the aspects of smart cities that can make living in the city better.
Right. Yeah, I give Mayor Mason a lot of credit. You know, when he first came to campus a few years ago, after he had just been elected and was talking about the vision of smart cities, I wondered where exactly he was going with that, you know, what that was going to be about. But when I see the work that he's doing, not just with smart cities, but some other areas where he's saying, okay, we have a challenge with the city of Racine that we, as you said, kind of pull it forward and make it a place that where people maybe of a younger generation of people coming in would say, I use technology for all these other things. This is what I've grown up with. I expect my city to be able to do this at the same point. And he, I forget who in the conference made the point that even younger people coming into the operation of the government, operation of the city, they're coming in saying, well, why can't we do this? There's a pay, you write the, you know, and that's a good thing. You know, that's a great thing if you're going to make the city an attractive place for that people and businesses and organizations want to come to that area.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What do you see as a professor here at UW Parkside? So besides your smart cities endeavors, you're also in the philosophy department. And what's the interaction like with let's say younger people, someone who's just coming out of high school? If you talk to them about technology or smart cities, is it something where it's expected, where it's not a thing where they think, oh yeah, I should get on board with the smart city stuff for technology? Or is there a difference in when you're dealing with different generations?
I think there must be a difference when you're dealing with different generations. I think the younger generation probably doesn't think in terms of smart city. I think they just think in terms of this is how things are.
Yeah.
I mean, especially we've got freshmen this term. The average age of a freshman this term is 18. I mean, so these are people who've grown up almost their entire lives with you know, what is, to my mind, still pretty miraculous technology.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, what, the iPhone came out in 2006 or something, you know, and so, like, that was 13 years ago, so they wouldn't even remember the time before. And so I think they're just really accustomed to the interconnectivity of the devices and the ways that they communicate, you know, text messages, various forms of social media. And I think that they just kind of expect it. You know, if I use the word smart city, they maybe don't know what that means because the term is unknown to them. But most of the aspects are probably very well known to them. As a philosopher in the Department of Politics, Philosophy, and Law, and just, I guess, my general approach, I think I always kind of try to not just accept that there is the technology, but to kind of push the boundaries of what that technology means. Like, what does it mean to be concerned about the technology? Again, talking to students earlier, I was talking about how the Internet of Things, you know, as of right now, the numbers are a little fuzzy, but I think there's already a million more devices on the Internet than there are people on the planet.
Wow.
And there are predictions that vary. They go from, one prediction is that by 2020, there's going to be 20 billion things on the devices on the Internet. There's only 7.7 billion people on the planet, but there's going to be 20 devices. But Intel actually predicted that there'd be 200 billion.
Wow.
And so then the question is, well, there's technology, and there's a technology that is the Internet. And generally, we think the Internet's for us. But if there's three times as many devices on the Internet as there are people, or potentially 30 times as many devices, you know, in what sense is that technology really our technology anymore? And so, like, it's those kind of more abstract questions that I get interested in when talking to students about stuff to try to get them to stop accepting it as just a thing in front of them and consider it.
Yeah.
I know last week I was talking to the students. Martin Heidegger has a piece on it's called the, I'm going to misquote it now, but it's the title is The Question of Technology, where he actually asks what is a piece of technology, and like, and more importantly, he actually argues that the technology we have reveals something about us as human beings. Like it reveals our interests and desires and wants and stuff like that. And so he was actually looking at technology as not how we use it, but like how what it becomes reveals about us. And so philosophically speaking, I come at these things from those kinds of perspectives, which is a lot of fun for me and hopefully a lot of fun for the students.
Sure. To think about that you're, whatever it is that you are, you're probably using technology that is just an extension of the person that you see yourself as or believe yourself to be.
Well, he was using it more broadly as like our like humanity, like so our culturally speaking, you know, like and I mean, he was even admitting things like a pen is a piece of technology. It is a tool devised by human beings to be used by us.
Right.
But what does it tell us? Well, one of the things it tells us is that humans like to write things down, right? And like we like to record information, and that's something really important about our society, about what it is to be in the world as a human, is to have this capacity to record information. And maybe we need pens less now, but That's actually what a keyboard on a computer does, too. It allows us to record that same kind of information. So we've actually used different technology for the same sort of purpose, because it's an important kind of thing for us.
It's probably just my own paranoia, but I was sitting in a meeting last week, and a group from outside the campus came in, and they were presenting. And I take notes on my phone. Because I can sit there with my phone, I can take the notes, and I can send myself the notes, and there they are, and I don't have a computer sitting in front of me. But I always wonder if people think, oh, he's just goofing
around
on his phone, versus, oh, he's actually paying attention, he is taking some notes, and there's just another version of putting the piece of paper and the pen down in front
that
of you.
Is another version, absolutely right. I cannot speak for the people that you were listening to at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But as a professor who stands in front of a classroom, there is a decidedly different presentation. That's not the right word, but a decidedly different kind of aspect to a person who is on their phone taking notes and a person who is on their phone scanning Facebook or playing a video game. That you can, if you've given presentations, you can tell when somebody's paying attention versus when they're not.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't worry about it, but I can't speak for the people. It would have been obvious standing up there to me if you were taking notes versus if you were goofing off.
Right. And I find the, whether it be the laptop or very seldom do I go into a meeting anymore and take a notebook with me, because whether it's just age, my handwriting stinks. and I get done, I look at the notes and go, wonder what I was writing down there. So at least on the keyboard, it's fairly clear.
You can do it clean.
I can get through that. That's a good thing. But
I still like taking hand notes. I do.
Yeah, there there are times where I'll flip back to it and take it. But then most of the time, I'm getting to the point now where I like having it there because I know where it is. I can read it. I can share it. I can send it a lot faster than doing those things. So
I think one thing I like about still taking notes by hand is that it forces me to be a bit more concise, because I can type really fast. Mm-hmm. And so if I get a keyboard in front of me, I can write like a paragraph pretty quick. And whereas if I'm handwriting it, I'm like, okay, what are the essential words that I need here to capture this element? And so it really forces me to distill whatever it is I'm trying to say.
Right.
I think that's what I like about it.
Yeah, it's it feels different too.
Yeah,
right. There's a different feel to being able to do.
I was reading something actually earlier today about PowerPoint slides, giving presentations with PowerPoints versus writing on the board and stuff. And somebody in there had commented, I haven't looked at the research, but they were claiming that there's research that shows that when you write something on the board, that it activates the mirror neurons and the people who are watching it. And so it's actually like a more active learning style to have people write it rather than type it. I don't know what that does when you yourself are taking notes, but
I could see that. If you're watching someone and they're writing something, you're almost like, oh, what's going to happen next?
Well, and you're kind of also like, when you're watching somebody write, your brain kind of automatically fills in what you would be doing if you were also writing.
Yeah.
Whereas if a PowerPoint just slides up, you just read the words. And so it doesn't activate that active portion of your brain as if you were doing it.
Right.
Because, whenever we watch somebody do something, we kind of envision ourselves doing it too in a certain loose sense.
Yeah. We're chatting today with Associate Professor of Philosophy, Dr. Christopher Hudspeth, on everything from what a smart city is and the brown bag series here at UW Parkside to whether you should be taking notes by writing things down or using a keyboard or whatever. So pretty wide range of topics. Christopher, tell us again how the time is noon to one on Wednesdays.
On Wednesdays, yes.
And how long does the series go this semester?
The last one goes... November 20th is the last talk.
Okay.
There is a Wednesday the next week, but it's the day before Thanksgiving, and so I figure campus is going to be a ghost town at that point.
Sure.
And then when we come back from Thanksgiving, there's only a week before the end of school.
Mm-hmm.
The students in class are supposed to have a poster session that week, which will itself be kind of open to the public, but I haven't figured out where that's exactly going to be yet, so I haven't announced it necessarily. But the speaker series ends on November 20th.
And is the speaker series always in the same place on campus?
Right now it is always in the same place. Yeah.
And that place is
Molinero D101. I'm hesitating because I'm like, I'm fantasizing about moving it someplace, but that has not been done yet. We had got a room. We were supposed to not have anybody get in the room after us so that we wouldn't feel compressed in our time. Mm-hmm. And then and then after the first week of class, they moved an actual class into the room at 1 o'clock. And so I'm like, come on, man. It's very specifically not what I wanted. But yeah. Yeah. I'm going to look around and see if I can find some place where we can have a more relaxed atmosphere. If I can't, we're in Molinero D101.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. Well, congratulations on the success of the series.
Thank you.
The fact that it was popular last year and seems to be, I know there's only a couple of them in the books, one in the book so
only
far
one,
this year, but very, very popular going through. And the topics that you shared with us certainly will be of interest to the community. People can find out more on the UW Parkside website. If you go into the search area and type in Brown Bag Series, up will come the information that you're looking for there.
Actually, it'll come up with Smart Cities, too.
And Smart Cities will bring up as well. So either Brown Bag or Smart Cities, and the information will be available to you on the web. So, Christopher, again, thank you for taking time with us. Much success this semester, not only with your Smart Cities initiatives, but also with your other academic areas and in philosophy, and we'll have to have you back on again to see how the series plays out.
Happy to come back.
That's it today for Parkside Today. Thanks for listening, and to hear past episodes of Parkside Today, please visit uwp.edu/parkside today. Thanks for listening, everyone.